Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast. The journey of a founder is unlike any other. The chips are seemingly stacked against you as an entrepreneur, but the burning desire to revolutionize the world and leave a lasting impact is stronger now than ever with many founders. Our podcast looks to inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs to pursue their next great idea, educate them on how to make this impossibility a reality, and create a supportive group of entrepreneurs who are there for their fellow founders. Our podcast features only the highest performing entrepreneurs who have bootstrapped, raised funds, built companies, sold companies, and have experienced life-altering challenges and some significant triumphs. Join us on this journey with the Founders Odyssey podcast and listen in on this upcoming episode. Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast, where we educate, inspire, and create a supportive environment for the community of founders. Today, we are joined with Solo Stove CEO John Maris. His unique ability to understand his customers, predict future trends, lead with integrity, and solve high-level intricate problems has put him at the forefront of innovation in the direct-to-consumer industry. John has been awarded the 2020 Southwest Entrepreneur of the Year and just recently helped his company to IPO on the New York Stock Exchange with a valuation of $2.1 billion. His drive to make societal impacts and commitment to create a value-based company has set Solo Brands apart and on an unbelievable trajectory. Welcome to the podcast, John. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. That was probably the best intro that anybody's ever made of me. So I might need to take you around with me in the future on any of my speaking engagements. Appreciate that.
Yeah, just, hey, they call me the hype man. I love working with brands. So,
love it.
You know, we're excited just to dive in to get to know you a little personally here, but also learn a little bit more about your company, the team that you've surrounded yourself with, you know, talk about this IPO that we're hearing and all those dang ads that I keep seeing all over social media. So we're excited to dive into that. So first off, tell me, why did you get started in business and what inspired you to be that businessman that we see today?
You know, I grew up in a home with an entrepreneur dad. He was constantly hustling, still to this day, the hardest worker I've ever met. Just taught me from a young age, you know, that you kind of get out of things what you put into them. And so I've always had a really hard work ethic, got a job at a really young age, did everything that you can imagine, from, you know, the mowing lawns to, you know, detailing RVs to building outdoor barbecue pits as a teenager, just all kinds of hustles that I had kind of growing up. But one of the things my dad told me a long time ago was, learn how to sell stuff. If you can learn how to sell stuff, sales kind of solves all, and you can make a lot of mistakes as long as you know how to sell stuff. And so I started my career in sales, and up until Solo Stove, actually all of my career progression has been all around sales and sales leadership. This is the first opportunity I had about 3 years ago. I was hired by the founders of Solo Stove as the CEO, and they were intrigued with my sales and growth background. I was intrigued with everything else, all of the operational side, the direct to consumer, e-commerce, and everything that this business had to offer. And so we put those two things together, and it's been a match made in heaven. I've loved every second of it, but really just from beginning to end, you know, one of the things that I learned early in my career when I was really getting into sales is, you know, sales kind of has this interesting, I don't know, stereotype, if you will, that people have. You know, it's either, you know, sleazy, or it's, you know, you're in sales because you couldn't make it anywhere else, or, you know, whatever the different stereotypes are. One of the things that I always, not always, but one of the things that I learned as I got into sales was every sale isn't a good sale. And there are bad sales and there are good sales. And being able to sit in the seat that I'm in now has allowed me more influence over what business we're actually doing and keeping out the bad business and taking in the good business, the business that's good for us, the business that's good for our customers, and ultimately the business that allows us to really propel ourselves into the future from a growth perspective. And that's really what I think about when you ask me kind of why am I in business or why am I doing what I'm doing? It's ultimately in the end, the motivation is to leave the world a better place. And, I don't even really like the idea or the term selling people. I like to say I solve problems for people. And it doesn't matter kind of what your product or service is, you should have something that's solving problems for people so that they ultimately sell themselves on what you have. So anyway, that's why I do what I do. At Solo in particular, our brand mission is create good moments that lead to lasting memories. And it's a super inspiring, motivating thing every day I get to do. I wake up, super amped every morning. You call yourself the hype man. Around here, I'm known as the hype man. I've always got a smile on my face. I'm always walking with a little bit of pep in my step because we get to wake up every day and we get to put smiles on people's faces. I mean, there's nothing cooler than what we get to do every day at Solo.
I like what you said there just a second ago, a good sale. Okay, let's really unpack that and what creates a good sell for the customer. I mean, I have my perspectives, but I'd like to hear from you as well.
Yeah, I mean, from a customer perspective, if it's not doing its job at solving whatever the problem is in that customer's life, and it doesn't matter if you're a B2B company, if you're a direct-to-consumer company, if you're a consumer products company, it doesn't matter. Your product or service should be solving some sort of problem for the end user, for the customer. And so you've got to ask yourself, with this particular transaction, with this one customer, do we have the best product to handle their situation? I can tell you that if somebody owns or lives in an apartment in New York City and there's a burn ban and they have no vehicle, so they never leave the city to go to a campground, Solo Stove is not the best solution to create good moments that lead to lasting memories for that customer. We are not the best sale. And at the end of the day, I don't want to sell something to somebody that isn't going to create that good moment. There's something else that might, like in New York City, if you've been to the city, you'll know that one of the brands there that's doing a good job at creating good moments and lasting memories is this really cool cycle outfit that I love out there called SoulCycle. This isn't a plug for them. I'm not an investor or anything. They probably have no idea that I'm even saying this, but SoulCycle's in the city and they're selling memberships to be able to come into basically a cycling class that just does a really good job at helping people exercise, but also putting smiles on their faces. That's great for them. If I'm a New York City apartment owner, or condo owner, and I never leave the city, that's a way better solution than Solo Stove to create good moments and lasting memories. But for us, if we can find a customer that is looking for ways that they can spend more time with family and friends and get people away from electronics and spending more time outdoors and making memories together, man, we've got the best product for that. And those are the types of customers we're looking for.
That brings me to DNA, right? So you're looking for the right DNA, but I want to ask you, what is your leadership style and the DNA now that you're injecting into this company that is almost on a rocket ship? And well, I mean, I would say it is, and we'll talk about IPO later, but let's talk about your DNA, your leadership style, and how you're stepping into the company and taking that home.
Yeah, there's two things that I think about from a style, leadership style standpoint. One is taking ownership. I don't like excuses. I just don't do well with it. And everybody on my team knows that. You come to me with bad news, you better have a solution and you better be prepared to own it. Don't be passing the buck. It's not somebody else's fault. Just go out and get stuff done. And that's important to me. Ownership and accountability is huge. I use the word accountability around the office on a daily basis, multiple times a day. Because ultimately, if everybody holds themselves accountable and doesn't even require that their bosses hold them accountable, the business operates smoothly every time. The moment that people start passing the buck and they don't hold themselves accountable is the moment we start making mistakes and then have a hard time coming back from those. So accountability is big from a leadership style standpoint. And then the next one is just selflessness or the lack of selfishness. It kind of goes back to accountability because when people are holding themselves accountable and not passing the buck, then ultimately you tend to be more selfless and less selfish. But that selflessness leads to a better customer experience. And that's how I lead the business. I never ask my team to do something I'm not willing to do. That's a really critical leadership quality for me is, you know, I don't care if it's picking up trash off the floor, if it's unloading, you know, boxes from containers, if it's slapping labels on boxes, if it's responding to customer, you know, service tickets, whatever it is, if it needs to get done, I have no problem doing it. And my team knows that. And they're willing to do a lot of hard things because of that, because they know that nothing's beneath me as their CEO or as their leader. So a combination of accountability and selflessness leads to really good outcomes. And that's really what we lean into here as a business.
So as a founder, you've gone through many business successes and failures, and you start to learn who you are through that process. And I would like to ask you, you know, when was there a time that you started to understand yourself more and understand your downfalls and your, you know, your strengths? So can we explain to the audience today how you deciphered between who you were, right, and then who you were becoming? And could you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, there's a great book that was really influential on me that I highly recommend, called What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And the whole premise of the book is exactly what you're talking about. It's basically saying, hey, just because you had some successes in the past and you've got a nice resume doesn't mean that the next thing you do is going to make you successful, or your past successes are going to make you successful in the future at a new role. And particularly where this, at least throughout my career, has really shown itself outwardly, is when people are transitioning from a non-leadership role into leadership, or a non-management role into management. A lot of times high performers are not great managers or aren't great leaders. And one of the main reasons is because high performers tend to start feeling pretty good about themselves. They're feeling good about their accomplishments, what they've been able to do. And they feel like no matter what they do when they roll into management or into leadership, that same success is just going to somehow follow behind them. And that isn't the case. You can't continue to operate. In fact, for most high performers, what got them to the point where they were a high performer was they weren't necessarily putting, you know, their colleagues around them first. They weren't being considerate of other people's feelings. They were out there grinding, head down, getting the job done at all costs. And when you become a leader or manager, that obviously isn't the first thing that you think of that makes a manager great or makes a leader great. So that was a big awakening for me, you know, when I read that book and started just thinking about what had gotten me to that point from a success standpoint. And then moving forward, what was it that was going to actually continue to make me successful in the role? I think that the word that comes to mind for me is adaptability or versatility, and just recognizing that what you've done in the past doesn't matter. What matters is that you're winning today or you're winning tomorrow. And so you've got to be adaptable. You've got to be flexible. You've got to be willing to change and not just rinse and repeat. One of my biggest pet peeves when I'm interviewing somebody for a position is when they come in and they say, oh, I've already done that, so you can trust that I'm going to do a great job for you. If they have that mentality, it immediately to me is a red flag, because no business is the same and no circumstance is the same. And so if you think that you can just come in and rinse and repeat because you've done something and you've got a nice resume, you're generally going to set yourself up for some failure. That's been key for me. I'm very versatile. I'm very flexible. Change does not scare me. In fact, I embrace it. I wrap my arms around it. I hug it. I pull it out of the treasure chest every day. And I take it as a huge opportunity, because to me, change is actually, if you're willing to embrace it, a massive competitive edge, because most people hate it. And so if you can wrap your arms around it and embrace change, generally, you're going to set yourself up for success as you transition throughout your career into, you know, different phases, different positions and whatnot.
I was like the term innovate or die. It's one of those things where it changed. You have to do it. And if you embrace that, then you're going to set yourself apart immediately and then take action on that change. Let's talk about your deciphering between quality people and building a team. So looking for characteristic traits as people are coming in, you know, knocking on your door, or you're looking for various ways to expand the company, or you're teaching your management on how to do that as well. So what are some key traits that you're looking for in building out your great team?
I was just reading a book called How Will You Measure Your Life by Clayton Christensen. He's the former dean of the Harvard Business School. Incredible book. One of the principles that he talks about in that book, as he's talking about finding talent and working with talent, is that you're looking for, has the person that you're interviewing had life experiences prior to the job that have prepared them to be able to successfully do the job you're interviewing them for? Not do they have experience doing the job that you're hiring them to do, but do they have the life experiences that will lead them to success in the job that you're hiring them to do? And I think that that's a huge distinction. Too often, people are interviewing based on resume. What have they done? Where have they worked? When none of that really matters when it comes down to your position. Now, there's certain things, like if you're hiring a general counsel, they've got to have gone to law school, of course. If you're hiring, you know, a nuclear scientist, they've got to be a scientist. But once you check the basic boxes of like what they have to have for that role, you should be shifting very quickly from what does their resume look like or what have they done to what are their life experiences that put them in a position to succeed. The way I verbalize that to my team internally is I talk about the differences between talent and skill. Talent's what you're born with and kind of your innate characteristics that you've kind of been groomed to have. And skill is what you've learned, like more from the standpoint of like nuts and bolts, like what you went to school for and what your past job was. And I hire 100% of the time, or at least I try 100% of the time to hire for talent over skill. It's just as a full, it's been way more bulletproof for me in my career to hire for talent over skill, because talent is ultimately where the rubber meets the road. If something doesn't go right, if there's a curveball, this change I was just talking about a few minutes ago, if it's a little bit different than you thought that it was going to be, do you have the grit, or do you have the flexibility or the versatility or the work ethic or the resilience or whatever quality is necessary for that job to power through and get it done? If you don't, it doesn't matter what you've done somewhere else. It doesn't matter what your resume looks like. You're probably going to fail. But if you have those qualities, if you've done those had those life experiences or done those life things that lead you to resiliency in whatever's going on, you're much more likely to succeed. So that's what I look for, is people that are resilient. They've got thick skin. They're adaptable. They're okay with change. You put those kind of qualities together, and generally you can go learn whatever skill you need to go get the job done.
I like that. The topic of resiliency came up multiple times in what you were saying there. Let's talk a little bit about your company's resilience. And throughout the course of 2020, when there's growing pains as well. So, you know, let's talk to those founders out there that are expanding quickly. And another thing that you have alluded to today is adaptability. So we have both resiliency and adaptability, which are two amazing characteristics. So let's talk about how your company was able to resiliently go through 2020, turn the corner, and then now we'll touch on the IPO here in a second. So let's go through that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, too often when founders and CEOs are thinking about growth, they're thinking about sales. And the reality is that growth is everywhere. And if you do one without the other anywhere, then you're going to miss the mark, at least from a long-term perspective. Our customers are our number one priority. We have this kind of foundational culture element at Solo that's customer, company, self in that order. And so at all times, we first take care of the customer, then we take care of the company, and then we take care of ourselves. And when you have the customer top of mind in everything that you do, you realize that you can't just grow top line and take care of the customer if you haven't grown your supply chain, if you haven't grown your customer service department, if you haven't grown, you know, your brand and e-com execution, because we're so heavy direct to consumer. We've had to really build all of those organizations up simultaneously. And you can see it in the way that we've built our organization. 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, we were using a 3PL to do all of our fulfillment. This is just kind of an example to give you an idea of how this comes out in practice. As we were growing, our customers were coming back. They loved the product, but they were hating the fulfillment experience. What was happening is our third-party logistics suppliers that were actually fulfilling the orders for customers were either super delayed or shipping the wrong items, or in some instances, the carriers were just damaging the product. So we would have these really great reviews on the product once the customer finally got the right item, but everything leading up to that moment was poor. Well, we have this brand mission, good moments, lasting memories. And I'm sitting at my desk thinking, man, before a customer's even used our product, we've already created a bad moment through fulfillment and we're not even in control of it. So I start picking up the phone, I'm calling our 3PL partners and they're like, you know, at first they're very receptive. Like, man, you're right, John, we need to be better. We're gonna improve. And I think they just thought I would go away. And within 2 weeks, like no improvement, everything's the same. And I'm picking up the phone again, calling them and saying, what gives, guys? Like, you told me this was gonna improve. We're getting the same feedback from our customers. And finally, after a few weeks, they just flat out told me, listen, like the way you're growing, we can't deal with the growth that you guys are putting forward. We cannot keep up. There's too much flex. Like you sell 100 orders one day, the next day you sell 150 orders, the next day you sell 200 orders. We can't add people fast enough to keep up with that type of growth. And it was at that point that I said, listen, if you guys can't dedicate the resources to scale with us, then we're gonna have to do this on our own. And their answer was, good luck. And this was a moment, and I'll tell you, we've experienced this multiple times, where most brands would have said, gosh, okay, like this is just gonna be a pain point, but we're gonna continue to deal with it. Maybe we'll add another 3PL, maybe we'll continue to look. Instead, what I did is within 2 weeks, I signed a 25,000 square foot lease on a warehouse, pulled all of our inventory back to our own warehouse. This was like 3 weeks before Black Friday, 2018, and just decided we're going to buckle down and do this ourselves. With myself and two employees, we, on Thanksgiving Day, on Black Friday, through that weekend and through the entire holidays, we're shipping boxes ourselves, loading on UPS, FedEx trucks. And the result was the customers were ecstatic. They were getting products on time. They were getting the right order. And I realized in that moment, nobody will ever care as much as we do. So for founders and CEOs out there that are scaling fast, my two biggest pieces of advice are first to recognize that nobody will care as much as you do when you're growing. And so the more control that you have, the better off your business is going to be. Since that moment, we've brought everything in-house. We do our own supply chain execution. We do our own fulfillment, our own warehousing, our own brand marketing. All of the ads you're talking about seeing, all of those are delivered from our employees. We don't use agencies because at the end of the day, nobody cares about our business as much as we do. So number one is try to control as much as you can, as much as you feel like you reasonably can, because the outcomes will be better. And then number two is take care of the customer first. If you take care of your customers first and your company second, not your company first and your customer second, generally you're going to be able to build your brand faster and more profitably than the intuition would suggest, which is take care of your company first and then your customer second. Everybody's thinking, I got to generate tons of profits through my company, and so I'm going to take care of my company and then the customer will come second because I'll have profits to invest in them. We've been much more profitable taking care of the customer first and the company second.
Now, by taking care of the customer first, it's like you're looking past the product. I like that line. It's like looking past the product. And, you know, let's look past this conversation to the IPO, okay? And how you've structured your company, how your company was pre-IPO. And then, you know, however in-depth you want to go there with creating a company and then putting it to IPO and then post-IPO, and then also capabilities that you will have as a company to start expanding.
Yeah. So I was hired by the founders. We had single digit employees a few years ago. You know, I was the seventh hire, I believe. You know, it was a different business. It was just a much different business. Today, you know, Solo Stove is 180, 190 employees. With the acquisitions, Solo Brands, I think in total is over 350. So it's a very different company today than it was. And never in my wildest imagination did I sit back and go, I'm going to be a public company CEO in 3 years. That certainly was not the vision. The vision was take great care of the customers and help a ton of people create good moments and lasting memories. And the outcome has been, kind of what you just talked about. So earlier this year, we made the decision that a public offering could be really interesting for us as a business. It allows us, one, to allow our customers to become shareholders of the business. We love our customers. It's always been about the customer. So being a public company actually gives them a stake in it, which was exciting for us. Number two, it also allowed us to have a kind of a clear path to capital raising so that we can continue to expand. We've been primarily a domestic business up to now. We have tons of runway in the US still, but we also see huge international opportunity. We wanted to expand internationally, and the IPO is gonna help us accelerate that and provide the funds for us to be able to do that. You know, to me, it doesn't feel a lot different yet. I'm sure it will at some point. We have our first earnings call, I think next Wednesday. I think that's been released. I'm allowed to say that, but you know, I'm just on the beginning stage of this. And I told my team when we went public, like, this is not a final event. It's a moment in history, but in a lot of ways, it's the first step. It's the beginning of our journey as we continue to expand and grow as a company, and especially in the public market. So we're early in our story. I'm early in my story. There's a lot of runway out in front of us. I think, you know, if we did this again a year from now, I'd probably have a ton of wisdom and insight to share with you. But, you know, for now, just suffice it to say that it's been an incredible ride. It was an incredible amount of work to just become a public company. Just the amount of non-day-to-day business operating stuff that came up, just getting your financials in order and partnering with the right banks and finding the right institutional investors to partner with in your IPO. There was so much work that went into that. We feel like we ran a very successful IPO and process, and had a ton of fun doing it. I've made some really great relationships along the way with good banking partners and investor partners. We're early in our story, and kind of more to come on the IPO process for sure in the future.
Well, I'm excited for you and with you during this process of growth. And, you know, one thing, as we all know, being a CEO of a company, it can be, you know, it seems like you're being pulled in every direction. Okay. I know you're on my podcast and I appreciate the time, but I also I've got to ask you, how are you managing your time? And speak to the CEOs that'll be listening to this about how you're structuring that. Do you have an assistant? Do you have, you know, what's your calendar look like? What are some of your routines? How do you optimally perform at the highest level?
I think the first one is don't waste time. It's so much easier to say than to do. I don't waste time. I like getting stuff done. I kind of operate on this philosophy of getting enough work done in 8 hours that most people, it would take them 12 hours to do. And so when you put in 9 or 10 or 11 in on some days, and many founders are putting in more, I definitely have gone through those stages myself. You can get a lot done in a day, but you can get twice as much done if you can take out the waste and the fluff. I do have an executive assistant. She helps with my calendaring, but in a lot of ways I drive it. I have people like yourself ask me all the time, like, why did you say yes to me, but no to the next one? Obviously I say no more than I say yes. And honestly, it's gut and intuition. Some people it just feels right. Feels like it's a good person. It feels like it's you know, somebody with good intentions or whatever it is. Like, I just, sometimes I feel like I'm giving back, whatever it is. But what motivates me is leaving the world a better place and interacting with great people. And so I kind of just follow my intuition on who I give my time to and where I allocate those resources. But, listen, we're going to spend, 30 to 45 minutes together today. And, it's going to be a good use of time, and hopefully it helps out some other people. You've been super gracious, from the moment we met. And so it made it an easy call for me. But I try to spend time where my gut tells me it's best spent. And then the other point that I would say about time management in general is I'm a checkboxer. Like, I like to get a lot done. And so in my day, I might have 40 things I need to do, and 38 of those things are like super fast, and 2 of those things take a little bit longer. My style is, a lot of people will start with the long stuff and then it ends up taking longer than they thought. And they only get like one thing done that day or two things done that day. And they leave the 38 things undone. I tend to knock off the things that are fast and easy because I like feeling productive. And it actually, when I go into the longer things, it actually helps me get those things done more efficiently because I feel like I've accomplished so much. So that's just maybe a style, more of a style point than anything else for me on the way that I approach it. But that's what works for me.
Good, man. Well, I've just got a few more questions here for you. But one thing is just want to thank you once again for being on the show. It's been a great time getting to know you a little bit better and where you're going and what you're excited about, your leadership style, your past, your present, and your future. You know, let's talk to the audience about how you stay inspired and you stay motivated and share that.
Man, I don't know when it was, but I woke up one day years ago and just decided that like you can either be great or you can not. And it's just life is way more fun doing great things, leaving a great track record behind you, you know, doing great things, building great relationships. Like everything is just better when you do it great. And so I wake up every day, like, honestly, what inspires me is I don't want to be mediocre. It like actually scares the crap out of me. The idea of being like mediocre scares me. I wake up every day and I'm inspired to go out and try to do something that nobody else could do. And that's what I try to do. I look at stuff and I'm, you know, people tell me all the time, like, man, like that's never been done. Or, you know, why do you believe that you can do that? And it's like, because if I don't, somebody else is going to figure it out and do it. So why not be me? Honestly, that's it. And that inspiration and that kind of fear of mediocrity all stems back to wanting to make my kids proud. I've got 5 kids and, you know, I look at them and my wife, who's, you know, my entire world. And that's what this is all about for me. It's just leaving a legacy. And, you know, I want to have great relationships with them. That's really important, but I also want them to look back and be inspired by me. And want to go and leave their own marks on the world. That's really the mark of in my mind of a successful parent, is, you know, what are your kids doing with their lives and with the world? And I'm pretty focused on that. So, you know, that's the gist.
Yeah. Being a father is one of the biggest things you can, you know, you can bless your children with and good leadership and someone that they can look to. You know, there's a lot to be said there, but you know, once again, I just want to thank you for being on the show today with the Founders Odyssey podcast, where we educate, inspire, and create a supportive environment for you founders out there. Thank you, John.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it, man.